from Hollywood is rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You have arrived at this week's installment of Rated LGBT Radio, and I am your host, Rob Watson. Today we have a fabulous show, and actually we have a fabulous show about a fabulous show. We are sitting here 10 days away from Valentine's Day, and this Valentine's Day with the restaurants that you may have wanted to take your honey to, with the movie theaters closed, all of them kind of out of reach, you may be looking for something to do. Well, you can prepare your romantic dinner and light the candles, pull out the chocolates, pour the champagne, and turn on your computer, because on that computer will be the hottest Valentine's Day drag show ever, and it's for a good cause. And that is what our show today is all about. We are going to be talking about the drag show Gun Violence is Still a Drag. So, yes, there is a serious undertone to all this. But it will be featuring from RuPaul's Drag Race, Thorgy Thor and Denali. And from the original Queer Eye series, Jay Rodriguez. And it looks like it's going to be the most fabulous show ever, like I said. It's being put on by the Drew Project. And today we have waiting on deck to come talk to us about this production is Sarah Grossman, who is the communications director for the Drew Project. And also joining us is Dominic Bellum, who is the physical production coordinator for A&E Studios. So exciting, exciting times. And I'm just so excited. I can't wait for these 10 days to be over so we can watch this show. But before we get to that, I want to welcome onto our show my esteemed co-host, Brody Levesque. Brody, welcome.
Hey, good afternoon, Rob. Good afternoon, good morning, or good day to our listeners around the globe. We so appreciate you listening to our podcast. And if this is your first time, please subscribe by hitting the subscribe button on the podcast app, both on your Google Android phones and your Apple iPhones. Today, just before we get started with our guests, I wanted to offer a bit of a note, a somber note, on the passage of a friend of mine, someone that I have known for over four decades. He was a pioneer in the gay movement. He was wild. He was fabulous. He was dedicated. And he is also the person who facilitated the creation of the gay pride flag. His name was Lee Mentley, and he passed away last January 20th, inaugural day. We're just getting wind of it now in his home in Sonora, California, north of San Francisco. Lee was noted for a lot of work that he did on the ground with various advocacy groups. He was especially known for the work he did at what really truly was a unique LGBT center, the first of its kind, in San Francisco. He was friends with Harvey Milk. And it was Lee who facilitated what became the Pride Flag, which occurred upstairs at 330 Grove, which was the LGBT center in San Francisco. The artists that he brought together were rather unique, which included, in addition to Mentley's input, Ling Segerbloom, who's still alive, and a couple of other gentlemen, unfortunately, who have passed away, including the late Gilbert Baker and James McNamara. Gilbert, of course, has often gotten credit as being the Betsy Rotz of the flag. However, that's not true. But Gilbert actually was the man in motion to get the pride flag accepted universally. And as a matter of fact, I don't think there's been any other campaign on the face of this planet that has been as successful as promoting and getting the flag out there, especially not for a movement. Lee was an interesting person. I used to love getting phone calls from him. He was highly opinionated. He was highly controversial. And rather than take up the entire show about Lee, I'm going to ask all of our listeners to go to losangelesblade.com. My colleague and dear friend, the former news editor of the Los Angeles Blade, Karen Oakham, has written a very moving piece that gives you all the background on Lee. It's gay pioneer Lee Medley Dies, the gay activist facilitated creation of the rainbow flag by Karen Oakham. And I highly, highly recommend you do that. On a brighter note, yesterday, the Vice President of the United States swore in the 19th Secretary of Transportation, who was then promptly embraced by his husband. So congratulations to Secretary Buttigieg. Pete was sworn in the ceremonial office of the Vice President, which is very ornate. I've been in that office. It's in the Eisenhower Old Executive Office Building. It's phenomenal. The Vice President was joined by the Second Gentleman of the United States. Chasen, of course, was there. Pete swore in on his mother's Bible. So, again, congratulations to Secretary Buttigieg. Breaking as we're coming on the air today, President Biden reaffirmed in a speech, a foreign policy major speech to the State Department today, that he will, in fact, be pushing ahead, writing out an executive memorandum for LGBT rights globally. This is something that he had made as a campaign promise, and he's now carrying through with it. And in the Washington Blade and the Los Angeles Blade, there'll be follow-up stories on that. However, the president, the National Security Advisor, I should say, said this. Jake Sullivan told the press this morning in the briefing room that the memorandum reflects the deep commitment the president has to these issues, both here in the U.S. and, of course, everywhere around the globe, and that the United States will speak out and act on behalf of his rights as they go. And last thing, which is critically important, we, of course, are in Black History Month. I want to give a shout-out to all of our Black sisters and brothers, or especially our Black trans sisters and brothers, as they often have, you know, difficult lives, and it's a difficult sometimes way for them. The National AIDS Memorial is going to observe Black History Month this year by a virtual display of blocks from the National AIDS Memorial quilt honoring Black lives that were lost to the AIDS crisis and the pandemic. You could find more information at the Los Angeles Blade of talking about it, but the National Memorial will be running this virtual exhibition all month long. You'll be able to go there, log in, take a look, see the different blocks, and it's a really cool thing. And with that, I will throw it back to you.
Yeah, no, that great recap. Deep respect for Lee in the passing, and you know, it does call to mind how there are so many forebearers of the LGBT movement that are alive and behind the scenes that we should be paying attention to before they pass. I mean, there are so many stories there, and it is so much more intricate than I think a lot of people want to make it. People want to point to one person here, one person there who did something. And it wasn't that way. It was a lot of people doing a lot of things and a very much of a collaborative effort of people coming together and, you know, no one person standing alone. But I also love the optics of what you described in terms of the vice president swearing in a member of the cabinet. And the part of it that stood out to me is that the two people standing in the room who were spouses were both men. And that is something that has not really happened before. So I mean that is a very, very cool thing.
It is. It really truly is. I the dynamics of it. I think the best picture was a screen grab I got from the C-SPAN footage right after Secretary Buttigieg put his hand down. Chasen wrapped his arms around him in a big old intimate huge bear hug, and over to the right you could see the vice president with her hand over her heart and a facial expression even through the mask. You could, it was the oh my, and it was just so cute, and it was just that embrace and the vice president doing that and the contextual history just of that photograph. You know, it's the first openly gay confirmed Senate confirmed cabinet officer, but more importantly than that, it's the first Black South Asian woman to hold the office of vice president. There's a whole bunch of history in there, and then you have to consider one more thing: Secretary Buttigieg and the vice president both ran as rivals against President Biden. So there's so much history and context in that shot. It's an amazing photograph. It's an amazing time. And yeah, I just think that's cool.
Right. Yeah. I think the competitors, you know, ending up on the same side is a good thing, but it's, you know, that's not unusual. I mean, George Bush, the senior, was Ronald Reagan's chief competitor and ended up as his vice president. And, you know, there's been a lot of precedent for that. But, you know, one of the pictures from the inauguration that I don't think got enough play that I think was astounding was the picture of the vice president with former President Obama doing a fist bump and looking into each other's eyes. And that was, I mean, that said so much. I mean, that was, you know, to me, like the true portrait of history, you know, of all the landmarks that two of them together represented. So anyway, cool stuff. So let's shift to this. The event that we're talking about in a weird sort of way has a legacy going back to not weird, but going back to the 2016 shooting at Pulse nightclub. A friend of our show's, Brandon, was there and has been on our show a couple times and talked about the loss of his friend Drew, in that shooting and, you know, the horror of that night. And from that seed of tragedy has grown an organization, an effort to end gun violence, which woefully little has actually been done. And so their work is still laid out ahead of them. And now leads us to this fabulous show here coming up on Valentine's Day. And with that, I want to welcome two people who are holding the heart of that show together, Sarah and Dominique. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
I am really excited about this show. And like you said, the connection of history runs deep through this organization. Like some people might know and some people might not, we lost our very good friend Christopher Andrew Leinonen at the 2016 Pulse nightclub shooting. Pulse was a place where I would often go with Drew and our friends, and it was not just a queer club, and it was so much more because, you know, we were all coming into ourselves in college. We spent a lot of time there just, you know, learning about what it was like to have a community. And I think that kind of, you know, touches back on what you and Brody were talking about how there are so many people who have done so much work. And it's important that we acknowledge the fact that it is a community that has pushed forward gay rights. And it is a community that continues to either suffer together or come together to make incredible change for itself.
Yeah, no,
absolutely. Sarah, to further your point, there's a phrase I always say that's like, we have to be grateful for those who fought before us. We have to fight alongside those who are fighting with us, and we have to fight for those who are coming out after us. You know, we have to be united and a group to be able to push forward. So this is a really amazing event, and I'm excited for it.
No, it is. It's funny. When you and I started talking together, we were saying the exact same things, and I thought that you weren't talking. It was actually my echo. So it's like we are all on the same page. That was very interesting. All of a sudden, the voice started saying different things. I'm going, wait, that isn't me. I love what you guys are doing. I love, first of all, the talent that you pulled together is really great. I mean,
yes.
Thorgi Thor and Denali are two outstanding performers, each one in their own right. And Jay is, you know, legendary, being the cultural icon guru from the original Queer Eye series. So just that alone is fantastic. I want to go to the serious issue, though, before or underneath this all. And, you know, it is the title of the show, you know, Gun Violence is Still a Drag. Since the Pulse shooting, right? and even before that, because, I mean, Brody was on the scene at Columbine, which dates him. And, you know, I was absolutely devastated as a gay dad by the Sandy Hook shooting. You know, those have left deep wounds psychically and emotionally for the two of us, even before Pulse. And then Pulse happened, and, you know, and so many shootings since then, and nothing has been done in this country to change that. And you guys are the activists on the front line. What are your thoughts on that? What are your feelings around that?
It is really disparaging. Of course, gun violence prevention is something that I have worked on since even before the Pulse shooting as well. And one of the sad but true statistics that we have to face every single day is, sure, we haven't had as many school shootings or mass shootings due to the pandemic. However, the single one-off shootings are way, way up. On average, there are 100 gun deaths per day in America. And to, you know, show the gravity of that, that's two Pulse nightclub shootings every single day. And, you know, it's not just, you know, the affluent communities and like Parkland or Sandy Hook. It's people, mothers in Chicago losing their kids every single day. People walking up and knocking on the door and shooting the person who answers the door just because. And the thing that we keep coming back to is not the person who has the gun. It is the lax laws that allow the person to get the gun. The man who went into Pulse nightclub and shot and killed 49 people and injured 53 others and emotionally injured thousands more obtained his guns completely legally. And the fact that he was on a no-fly list, the fact that he had been marked as a person who has domestic violence charges against his partner, that type of person should not be able to obtain a gun, period, the end. And we have seen a little bit of change in some states, like out here in Colorado where I live, where Brody covered the Columbine shooting 21 years ago already. We have passed a red flag law here in Colorado, which allows the police or loved ones to remove your guns from you for a certain amount of time, whether it is that you are a danger to yourself or somebody else. If you're threatening suicide and you are known to have a gun, that's a great time to perhaps take away the gun. Because we know that suicides count for 50% almost of daily deaths by gun. And, you know, that kind of thing is fleeting. Oftentimes a person who is wanting to commit suicide, give them 48 hours and that feeling will pass. So the thought behind the red flag law is give it 48 hours or 72 hours and the feeling will pass. So those kinds of things, the extra background checks, the capped magazines, those have all passed here in Colorado. The problem is that we do not have anything federally on the law. So folks in Chicago can drive on over to Indianapolis a couple hours away, go grab a gun, and drive right back to Chicago. And so when they talk about Chicago having, you know, the most restrictive gun laws, yet the most gun violence, look at why. It's because we do not have anything federally sound. We do not. So the gun laws essentially are as weak as the weakest state's gun laws.
Yeah, no, very well said. And we've experienced that in California also. We had a shooting a few years ago here at the Garlic Festival, and the guy who did it had went over to Nevada, bought his gun that was illegal in California, and just brought it over the state line and used it here. And it is appalling to me, just it's not just guns in general, but the different classification of gun that is the most efficient killer contraption that you could have. I mean, you have the bombers that at the Boston Marathon, who with well planned and hidden bomb and, you know, huge crowd of people and everything else, killed three people. And then you have, you know, these people with these efficient guns that kill three people in 2 seconds. I mean, and many more. And we have to be licensed to drive a vehicle which could hurt and harm people, rightly so. It's, you know, a multi-ton vehicle that can do physical harm. And why we don't have anything close to that for these other contraptions that can cause much more harm is a great mystery to me. And the other thing I really love about what you guys are doing, and because this event is such a cultural event, is this consciousness of gun violence, I think, is a cultural problem in America, where Donald Trump and his pull, one of the big strings that he pulled and continues to pull with the, you know, 74 million followers that he has, is this love of guns. And so I think the cultural impact you guys are doing is important to make that part of it. That being said, how are you guys integrating the title of the show, you know, Gun Violence Is Still a Drag, with the fun and frivolity of the performers? How are those two coming together?
Sure. So we'll have Brandon talking a little bit about our mission and a little bit about it being the fifth year marker of the Pulse nightclub shooting. But what we really want to do is highlight our work with LGBTQ youth. The reason why we decided to do this on Valentine's Day is because we know that during this pandemic, and while kids are unable to sometimes go to school or attend their Gay Straight Alliance, they might be at home with unfriendly family. And we have an activation that we're going to have during our show, where we're going to direct folks to our website to download these specific graphics that we have had made by queer artists. Valentine's for LGBT youth. We're encouraging folks to share them on their social media. We're encouraging folks to tag their local or favorite LGBTQ center so that they can see the love and support that is truly out there for these kids. We are also, while we are raising awareness about the realities of gun violence, we're also raising money for our scholarship program, which I am super, super, super proud to say that as of this June, the Drew Project will have given out $100,000 in scholarship to queer kids in honor.
Yay! What a good guy!
Yes. Thank you, Uncle Brody. We are just over the moon, and it is because of the support of these Pride employee resource groups like Dominic's. He is here on behalf of A&E. Stars and Lionsgate, and that, you know, having these organizations that not only walk the walk by meeting, but also talk the talk by getting involved with organizations like us instead of the Big Five is really, really important because, you know, I love the work that HRC, GLAAD, GLSEN, and the Trevor Project do, but they also have the funds to be able to afford celebrity. They have the, you know, the visibility that celebrities want to show up and be on the arms of these organizations because it helps propel their look as well. And so I wanted to turn it over to Dominic to kind of talk about the importance of actually taking action as a Pride employee resource group.
Well, before I have one thing to add, sir, and Dominic too. February 14, of course, Sweethearts and Everything Else, but Sarah, for, you know, two of the kids that I know, Emma Gonzalez and Cameron Caskey, along with David Ogg and a few others, February mm-hmm. the 14th also has a very, very special meaning and not such
right.
a good way for them. And, of course,
right.
3 years ago, that was the anniversary of the shooting and the 17 dead at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. So
right.
I think that I see what you and Dominic are doing and what's along with Brandon's help, obviously, as a two-part component there. I think it's also honoring, especially since Cameron and Emma are gay, but, I mean, honoring the memory of the 17 victims at Parkland, as well as
mm-hmm.
pulling this up as a promise in the future, yeah, even for the kids now. So that's all I just want to say. Dominic, my apologies, but I just wanted to kind of put that in there.
No, no worries. I'm so glad you did. This conversation has been wonderful. And, you know, I provide a unique perspective in that I grew up in Northern California where, you know, hunting was our big thing. So guns to us was like, oh, yeah, we're going to go hunting on, you know, Saturday morning. And I just want to add off of that. I'll shift back to ERGs in a second that I think a lot of the 74 million followers that you're talking about are these folks who say, oh, well, I need guns to hunt game, and how are we going to do this? And it's like, sure, you know, you can hunt game, but let's look at how you're going to get these guns illegally, or excuse me, legally. And also, you don't need an automatic rifle to hunt a deer or a bird. You're going to shred the animal.
It would ruin the meat.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's,
no,
and it's, you know, those are a lot of the conversations I've been having is like, let's put this into perspective for a minute.
Well, I think that's an excellent point, is it is perspective because even surveys that have been done across the board of people who are pro-gun, the vast majority of them are for sanity and are for legitimate restrictions around guns. But a lot of the conversation, and that's, I think, why, you know, sort of taking this to the culture level, you know, our culture is gone so extreme. It's like you're red or blue or black or white or this or that. And it's not
mm-hmm.
letting the middle conversation where true solutions can actually take place take hold. It's like it you know, there is sanity to be had around this. We just haven't really gotten to it because you take one step and somebody comes across with hysterics and
right.
you know, and shuts it down. Dominic, tell us about A&E and how you got involved personally and how the organization got involved.
Sure, absolutely. So I was formerly at Stars and Lionsgate and came over to A&E about, I would say, July of 2019. And Stars and Lionsgate have always had a large amount of employee resource groups. So I had a really great first experience as my first job out of college. Then when I transitioned to A&E, a couple months later, I walked into the HR office and was like, hey, do you guys have ERGs or like passion groups or anything that I could be involved in at the company now that I'm settled? And the response I got was, what's an ERG? And I'm like, okay, let me tell you. So I was fortunate enough to be, the founder, and I'm one of the co-chairs of our Pride Employee Resource Group. And now I also oversee our Diversity Advisory Council for Employee Resource Groups. So we're starting 9 employee resource groups coming up. We have a mental health one, women's prime timers for our 50-plus group, Black and African American group. So we've got some really exciting groups coming up. But specifically why we're doing this is, you know, we spend so many hours of our day in an office and around our coworkers. So, you know, ensuring that there's a place for like-minded people to gather, volunteer, build their network, and grow in their professional career is imperative to the health, safety, and the well-being of these employees. So while we're hitting the employees, you know, we're representing these underserved communities or what would be considered minorities in a workplace, they need these spaces to foster a better community when they don't see someone who looks like them. So we're also providing education, awareness, and the opportunities for the employees who identify, and then also the allies of that group. So if you want to learn more about the LGBTQ plus community, we welcome allies to the group to learn more, to be involved in the community, so on and so forth.
That's fabulous. And I've been in a corporate environment where, and actually it was with one of the big high-tech companies just a few years ago, where there was some questions that came up on the public forum. And it was surprising, not the supportive comments that were made, but people who were employees on staff that were pretty archaic. And the discussion was just showed that is necessary. And those resource groups are pretty vital. They're not you know, passé at all.
Right.
How did this event come about, guys? Where did the brainchild come to do this for Valentine's Day?
Well, I think it was, so last year, our wonderful friend, someone I worked with at Stars, Tennessee Martin, came forward to me, knew that I was forming the Pride ERG, and she said, I should go back. Tennessee wanted to do some sort of drag show and do something about gun violence. And that was an idea that we were mulling over while on the Pride board together for about 6 months. And then when I moved over to A&E and started the Pride board, Tennessee had already had all of these conversations built up with the Drew Project, and they were ready to go. And Tennessee last minute hit me up and said, hey, does A&E want to participate and co-sponsor and put a little bit of money in, and let's see how big we can make this? And they agreed. It was a successful event. Last year we raised about $10,000, which was enough for 2 scholarships to send outstanding LGBT students to college. And then I would say, Sarah, what was it, like back in November, we get a text from Tennessee, and Tennessee, Sarah, and I all have our little group chat, and Ten texts us and was like, so I think we need to do this again. And we were like, okay, great. And it's been a little brainchild, and I don't remember who suggested Valentine's Day, but yeah, it's been really amazing.
It has been.
No,
actually, I was connected with Tennessee. She literally called me randomly out of the blue cold and said to me, I have this idea. I like your organization. I found you online. Let's support you. And so that really speaks to the importance of digital communications for nonprofits right now. but yeah, so we unfortunately were not able to meet this year in West Hollywood. And unfortunately, Flaming Saddles, where we had it last year, is now closed. But we decided that why not create an event that anybody from anywhere can join us for, because the Drew Project has supporters in Finland, in Australia, New York, LA, Chicago, Florida, you name it. And we're never able to get everybody together for an event. And so it's our hope that because it is a weekend and a good cause and incredible cast being, and the event itself is being edited by one of the editors and producers of the Salt Lake City Housewives.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be very high quality and very good.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. How did you get the cast together? How, I mean, like I said, Thorgi Thor is from season 3 of RuPaul's Drag mm-hmm. Race, and Denali is currently on Drag Race, and if mm-hmm. You know, it's unclear at this point how far she actually makes it, but they're both awesome. How?
Yeah, she's kicking
they seek you
butt
out?
Right
how,
now.
Yeah. How did you get them?
Face trust and a little bit of pixie dust.
Yeah, basically, yeah. thankfully, you know, part of the plus of pairing up with these entertainment employee resource groups and other folks in LA is they know a lot of people. And over the last 5 years of doing this work, I also have met a lot of fantastic humans who just want to help out because they love the mission. And so I had Chad, the director of Flip Phone Events, put out an ask for me, and that's how we got Denali, Lucy Stuhl from Chicago, and I think that's it. And then Tennessee, through her connections, was able to get us Thorgi Thor and Ruby Rue from New York City, and the rest, we kind of just, you know, just like Tom said, fairy dust.
Yeah,
we were so grateful to have Vico Suave come back, who was actually performed in our show last year, the only drag king we have, but they're incredible. So we're really excited about this lineup.
Yeah, and Jay Rodriguez is acting as MC, is that right?
That is correct. He is our host. And he also does a performance of a song himself. We gave all of the performers the directive of the theme is love songs or love sucks. And so some people chose love songs, and some people are catering to those who are a little bit bitter this year.
and maybe some of both.
Yeah, exactly. You know, some of the songs can definitely be up for interpretation based upon how you're feeling that day.
Well, I think it's super, super exciting. And did each performer, they were responsible for their own production? And is this going to be live, or is this already, have you already filmed and produced?
It's taped to live. Yeah, it's taped to live so that it could be edited really, really nicely, and so that we wouldn't have any issues day of. So everybody sent in a video, and our editor is working his magic on throwing the whole thing together.
That is awesome. Brody?
I don't know. I mean, I just listening to you guys at the flow of the conversation, and as you and Sarah know, yeah, the LGBTQ culture is just not my lane. So I'm like, you know, it's one of those things where I just kind of stand back and I just take notes.
That's fine, Brody. We'll send you a wig for the occasion. You can participate.
Oh, okay.
Well, truth be told, Brody's friends with a straight couple that did get him involved in RuPaul's Drag Race. So. He's a little more.
Sarah, you know my dancer friend Arcadian Broad, formerly from the Orlando mm-hmm. Ballet Company, who's now in Cincinnati. Okay, when I moved to California, I stayed with Arcadian and with Taylor, and he'd gotten a job with the Cincinnati Ballet Company, and so I was their house guest for a week, which involved basically cooking for them and then walking Gatsby and playing with the cat. But along the way, Taylor and Arcadian were like, you have to watch this. And I'm like, you've got to see this. I mean, Arcadian and Taylor were like shocked. I've met RuPaul numerous times, okay, to the point where he kind of like semi-recognizes me. But it's always been in my capacity as a reporter. Never, sure. ever in a, you know, I mean, so, you know, if Ru would walk in the room and go, oh, yeah, you know, away we'd go. But I'd never seen it. And so I got a real education, and they gleefully indoctrinated me in Drag Race because I, quite frankly, had no clue. So I'm a little less clueless than I was, but I'm still, yeah, pretty much clueless.
You know what? It's fine. Just tune in and pour yourself a mimosa and we'll take care of the rest.
No, really. This is, relax and enjoy. It will be fun. It's like, so what is the, how do people link up to this? How do they find out about it? And how, is there a cost for it, or are you looking for contributions for the scholarship separately?
We wanted to make sure that it was not cost prohibitive to join, so it is a flat $10 donation to get access, and it will be streaming through veeps.com, V-E-E-P-S.com, and you can get your tickets at thedrewproject.veeps.com. And the platform is really cool because it also offers a chat room so that folks can communicate during the event. And we are going to have some members of the cast in the chat room, as well as a couple other celebrity guests that A&E, Stars, and Lionsgate are working on right now. And it's just going to be great to be able to chat with everybody, and there will be some drinking games and just total interaction for a very fun day. You can definitely find any other information you need on the Drew Project's Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
That's going to be so awesome. It's just going to be so much fun. I'm almost beside myself. So tell us a little bit more about some of the lesser knowns. We talked about the three that are kind of headliners, and I think most people who even done a sort of a drive-by with Drag Race or Queer Eye know of them. Like Jess Gallo, Roxy Brooks Lords, Ruby Rue, Lucy Stuhl, what are their stories, and how did they come about?
Sure. So Roxy Brooks Lords actually was a performer at Pulse Nightclub back in the day, and actually performed at the club 2 weeks before the shooting. We're going to have that performance in there, as well as a performance from her and other Drag Race star, Honey Davenport. Roxy and I have become very fast friends since starting getting her into the fold, and we're super excited to have her. Lucy Stuhl is a very popular and hilarious drag queen out of Chicago. She is a bearded queen and has been leading the charge on making sure things are more equitable in the Chicago drag scene. Jess Gallo is a lesbian singer out of Southern California whose video I am super excited about premiering. She can be found on Spotify, SoundCloud, etc. We had to have something for the ladies, obviously, something sassy.
Yeah, really.
Ruby Rue is a comedy queen out of New York City. You would probably have seen her at the Duplex on Christopher Street, or Pieces, if you have seen some drag in New York City. My favorite part about this is I will not have to take the subway all the way to Christopher Street in order to see her. And finally, Mista Aphrodite is a teen drag performer out of Tampa, Florida. In our shows, we really try to showcase the youth who we support. So that's that. And Dominic already had mentioned Vico Suave, who is a Puerto Rican non-binary actor. You might have seen them in the show Vita. And I think there is an online show that they're in called They Thems. But they're incredibly talented, and their video is just, you will not stop laughing.
Oh, that is awesome. Now, most of these performers actually do their own singing, right? This is not that lip syncing is like a just, but this is singing versus lip syncing.
Yeah, a couple of them do sing their own songs, including Sorgi, who we were expecting her to send a violin piece, but she actually sings for us, and I don't know if anybody's heard her sing, so it's going to be a blast.
Yeah, this show, you know, for the folks listening, there are some of these shows that come together, and they can be a little spotty, and even some with fairly big names. I've watched some of the Broadway stuff they pulled together, and you know, there are some spots that were a little questionable, but this one sounds so tight. It sounds like you guys have covered every base. Everybody is a super exciting talent that's involved. It just, I'm thrilled for you guys and for us.
Thank you. I'm excited to see you guys in the chat room next Sunday.
Yep. We better not be cross, because neither one of us mince words when if there are any haters in there. So we'll take it out.
No. I mean, listen, if people want to come in and pay to be haters, I will take their money and then kick them out.
Okay, good. You should just have them put in an open credit card that, you know, for every cuss word they get charged $5 or something.
There
you
we
know.
Go. Perfect.
No, I think it'll be cool. So tell us about what the Drew Project, looking forward beyond this event. What is coming up for the Drew Project?
We are currently trying to figure out how things are going to shake down for June. I think that since most of the prides themselves are going to be digital again this year because the vaccine rollout was a little bit slow to start, we're going to probably have a small gathering in Orlando and a digital gathering for other folks who want to pay their respects and honor Drew with us. But like I said, we're going to be giving out our scholarships to 5 queer students and maybe even have some kind of drag competition. We hosted one in the spring where we offered drag queens to start Facebook, or drag performers rather, to start Facebook fundraisers for the Drew Project and raise as much as they can, because at the end they get half to help pay their bills, because we want to also support the community that has been so, so supportive of us.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. You know, at the top of the show, Brody and I were talking about Pete Buttigieg being the first gay person confirmed to a cabinet member level seat in the government. So that visibility sends a message to young LGBT kids about where they can go. Is the Drew Project incorporating that kind of vision for kids, you know, trying to get them involved in, you know, their future and taking a leadership role in the country and giving leadership guidance?
In a way. So part of the reason why we thought it was so important to give scholarships to LGBTQ youth specifically was because these are the kids who are our future leaders. They're the ones who are starting up their gay straight alliances. They are the ones who are a part of creating change or Time to Thrive. And they are the future leaders of this country. And so we wanted to ensure that the financial piece did not hold them back from discovering their full potential in higher education. And I'm still in touch with a lot of them through this and the work that I did at the Matthew Shepard Foundation. And it's just incredible, the next generation of youth. I think back to what I was doing when I was 17, 18, 19, and I am just in awe of the incredible things that this next generation is achieving for us.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, because back in the day, you know, when I was in high school, I couldn't have fathomed that kind of involvement in anything. I mean, it just was,
right?
You know, Yeah, it was. It is astounding, and I think that is both a credit to, you know, what has happened in our culture, as well as even to technology, because kids are just so much more in touch with everything. But yeah, it's both impressive and necessary. With this new administration and everything going on, is there a tightening or a better collaboration, communication between the different nonprofits that are interested in curbing gun violence across the country? What is the impact that you're seeing at that level?
You know, it is always my hope that organizations that have similar goals coalesce to, you know, for the greater good, to be able to make life better for the communities that they serve. We have been very lucky to have, you know, partnerships here and there with for-profit organizations, but I would love it if we could eventually partner and do more work to better engage the communities that we are working towards making life better for. But I think sometimes ego gets in the way, and, you know, one organization wants to keep this proprietary, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that,
right,
you know, the more open source material we have, the better off we would be. So that's why the Drew Project offers its super comprehensive, the most comprehensive one in the world, I would say. Our GSA guide is free, open source to download straight from our website, because we don't want that to be prohibitive. We want people to be able to engage with our stuff however they can at whatever level they see fit.
That is so awesome, and that you're doing that, and it is important that information sharing and best practice sharing, and, you know, kind of helping the whole industry, if you want to call it that, rise. I just, you know, I do think of, we were talking about young people and their activism, and I think that was one of the things that was so impactful about Parkland, is the kids there have become such spokespeople themselves, almost each one individually. And I really hope to see them and others take momentum, and everyone, you know, that was impacted by Pulse, you know, moving that forward to the level where, you know, it has the effect that it becomes the true counterforce to the NRA, and has an impact. And now with the leadership that we have in Washington, that is made possible. And
definitely. You know, I've seen the work that Everytown has done, and they have flipped seats. They have changed hearts and minds, and I am incredibly proud to be a part of that organization as a speaker fellow.
Yeah,
they're really pushing the needle.
Well, your work, the work that both you guys have done on this, both this event and what you do otherwise, I think is outstanding and awesome. And, you know, my hat is deeply off to you in gratitude for everything you do. We are winding down here. We're coming up to our last 5 minutes here. What haven't we talked about or asked you about that we should have so far?
Ooh. One other thing that I wanted to touch on that I wanted to have Dominic talk about was the importance of the visibility of queer people in the media and what they are doing at the networks to kind of push that. Can you answer that in 2 minutes, Dominic?
Absolutely. I will speak fast.
We'll give you three.
Oh, thank goodness. So, you know, specifically with the recent Black Lives Matter movement, a lot of networks and studios have been taking a complete shift in what their development looks like, what their development slate looks like. Unfortunately, it was like pulling teeth previously at most places, but now it has become the forefront of everything. How can we, you know, make all of these things diverse? How can we put, you know, an Asian lead or a South Asian lead with, you know, a Black and African American person? How can we make them the protagonists? So, you know, media helped shape our culture. And so seeing someone like yourself in mainstream TV and film, again, especially if they're the protagonist, gives us the sense of hope and strength that we're also able to accomplish those incredible things. So it's going to show people, you know, who are labeled as minority, that they have the ability to succeed and be a part of something bigger. You know, seeing someone who looks like me, it shows that these development executives are, you know, thinking about people who look, think, identify, and love like not only me, but other other minority cultures and communities. And I stole that one from a dear friend of mine who she's like one of my go-to people, but she always said, like, I'd always want to see people who look, think, identify, and love like me. You know, and I'll plug a couple of things. I'm a part of Pantsuit Nation on Facebook. I'm not sure if you are, but the Black and African American families posting kids of their young daughters looking at Kamala Harris getting sworn in was just so incredible. And you know, this season of RuPaul's Drag Race, if you're watching, Gottmik is such an incredible character,
right?
Not even character, performer, you know, being trans,
right.
And their journey is so incredible. And then something that I was personally a part of was a show called The Big Sky on ABC. Jesse James Keitel is one of the first non-binary actors to really be portrayed in a, you know, a bigger role. They're
right.
Absolutely phenomenal, stunning, and it's a really cool show. So, you know, we've got a lot of wonderful people making an impact in media, and now we just need to keep pushing that forward.
Right. Yeah, no, and I've watched Big Sky, and that is you're absolutely right. And Bridgerton also, not necessarily LGBT, but it has brought a lot of ethnic faces into what was traditionally a white portrayed scenario of, you know, back in the day England and all that.
Right.
You know, honestly, we need to do a full show on just what you're talking about, Dominique. And I'm going to publicly ask Brody to touch base with you to put together just a podcast on that alone, because that's, you're just touching the tip of the iceberg of that conversation that
right.
We should have and talk about.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Super great point. So again,
thank
folks,
you.
The show is on February 14th. You can't forget the date. It is Gun Violence is Still a Drag, although it is going to be funny, romantic, you know, love song, resentful, I guess, also, you know, if you like the cynical side of it all. But it should be just one heck of a lot of fun. Sarah, quickly, do you want to give us again the website they need to go to?
Absolutely. It is The Drew Project, and Drew is spelled DRU.Veeps.com. That is TheDrewProject.Veeps.com, and you can also find information on all of our social media outlets.
Well, I want to thank you guys for being here today, for doing this show, for doing everything you do in all directions. It's like you guys are covering a vast amount of needs and growth and vision, and it's just phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. I want to thank Brody
thank
for
you.
His work. Absolutely. And Brody, for your work, both in the journalist truth that you bring us every day, as well as your work here on this show. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. We love you, and we will be back here again next week with another interesting, fascinating, fabulous topic. Join us then.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.